Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast 189, recording on Friday, the 21st of October, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield in the host's chair. Ewan Spence is off somewhere in America, enjoying the sights and sounds, I think, of Harry Potter World and the Kennedy Space Center. Meanwhile, we have Dan in Sussex.
Hello, everybody. It's Rafe Blanford here.
And up in Hull.
Hey, it's David Gilson. Hello.
And the three of us, plus Mr. Ewan Spence, all be meeting at Nokia World next week, which will be fairly exciting, I think, and we'll come to that shortly. But first, Nokia released their results for quarter three 2011 yesterday as we record this. Now, Rafe, there's a lot of numbers here. Is it possible to summarise these in a couple of minutes?
Yeah, well, I'll do my best, Steve, but you know how much I like to talk. But I think the headline on these Q3 results are really they're better than people were expecting. But let's not, you know, beat around the bush. You know, they're still pretty weak, but that's a continuation of what Nokia have been doing really for the last year. But I think the positive upside to it, which I'll talk about the numbers in a minute, can be seen in the fact, you know, the share price was trading up 10%. I think there were a lot of people pleasantly surprised about this. And so I sort of headline this on the road to recovery with a question mark. I don't actually think there's much of a question mark about it. You know, this is a step along the road to recovery, and perhaps Nokia are further along it than maybe was expecting. But as I say, the numbers still are pretty weak. I mean, there's an operating loss of 71 million euros, net sales of 8.9 billion. That's down 13% year on year. The sort of slightly brighter spots, or the more important ones, if you like, are, as always, the devices and service division, and the profits there were 132 million. That's still down year on year, but the margins and the profit has recovered from the previous quarter. So margins last year this time were 11%, but they're up from minus 4.2% in the last quarter. So, you know, that's a pretty big improvement and putting back into profitability in terms of the device and service division. That's all kind of the normal figures. There's then the non-IFRS stuff, which, as we've said before, is kind of the leaving out exceptional, you know, exceptional payments and one-off things. So they're better measure of underlying performance, and there the operating profit of the company as a whole is 252 million. And then if you look at device and services, actually 22 million euros. That's obviously a bit low. That's because there are some exceptional charges involved in, you know, the reorganization that's going on inevitably at the moment with the shift to Windows Phone and a few other bits and pieces, such as the Accenture deal, which has seen Symbian effectively outsourced in terms of software development and management. But as I say, I think generally a positive picture, and where the things look particularly bright are in the numbers of devices sold. And in terms of overall, that's pretty strong at 106.6 million. That's down 3% year on year, but it's up 20% sequentially. And that's really led by very strong mobile phone sales of 89.8 million, which is up 8% year on year and up 25% quarter on quarter. Now, for mobile phones, that's actually a long way ahead of the rest of the industry, which is actually seeing a sort of a relative leveling of mobile phones. The picture is less bright in smartphones. However, the sort of decline in sales that we've seen in the last two quarters has stopped. They sold 16.8 million devices of smartphones. That's pretty much all Symbian devices. That's up 0.1 million or 1% from the last quarter. Not very much, but considering we had seen, you know, a drop from 27 million down to about...
down to
25 million, yes, and then, as you say, and then 16 million. That's, you know, it's not in one sense it's not good, but that's a very big step change in what the trend had been in the last couple of quarters. Now, some of that can be attributed to lowering of the price of devices, and you see that in the falling of the average sale price per device, both in mobile phones and smartphones. Overall, it's obviously down quite a bit because of the increased proportion of mobile phones. But the interesting thing is the, you know, as I said earlier, the device and service margin is up, which is suggesting an improvement in the operational efficiency and the operational expenditure. And that actually means, despite sort of price cutting strategically to be more competitive, they're not actually losing money, or the profits aren't being affected, at least not, you know, tremendously, as was previously the case, I think. So, as I say, you know, it's overall, it's still relatively weak, but ahead of expectations. And there's definitely a suggestion of, you know, a rebound from the poor performance of the last 12 months. And I think now the attention will turn very much to Nokia World, with the potential for, you know, Windows Phone device announcements coming up. We may see some Symbian phone device announcements in that as well. And also be looking at the strategy for into 2012. So, you know, it's a very important event. You know, Elop has kind of got to the point now where he's sort of sorted out a lot of the problems, but, you know, there is still a lot of work left to do.
Yeah, looking at your charts, Rafe, it's fair to say that the decline has kind of bottomed out a bit. It's 16 million smartphones in the quarter, which is still a fairly healthy number. It's only marginally less than the number of iPhones sold across the world in the quarter, which has been a bit provocative because obviously Apple make a lot more profit, but the numbers are vaguely comparable. Samsung, of course, is now in the number one spot, but it remains to be seen how long for. My guess, Rafe, I mean, with Symbian Belle coming on strong, these new devices with 1 gigahertz processors and with Nokia's Windows Phone devices starting to come on strong at the end of the coming quarter and into the first quarter of 2012, I think we could see that 16 million smartphones a quarter number rise to 20, maybe even 25 million a quarter again.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible. I mean, Q4 will be interesting because obviously any new devices will take a while to come on stream, the Windows Phone ones, but we will get the Bell devices coming in and they could have a significant impact. I mean, one of the things that Stephen Elop, Nokia CEO, talked about in the results call was the fact that some of the new devices are actually having a halo effect, and he specifically mentioned India and the dual SIM products there has actually caused a 24% rise in a completely unrelated product, actually the Nokia 1616, which isn't dual SIM, you know, and is about a year old. And, you know, there is speculation that that kind of impact could happen again with the Windows Phone device. You know, with the buzz coming back to Nokia, people are more interested in the brand again. And, you know, we've said it before, there is a lot of loyalty to the Nokia brand. It's very familiar out there in the marketplace. So, you know, it's kind of a wait and see. I do think it's quite unpredictable at this point in time, but I think we'll certainly see a small recovery. It's just a question of, you know, how far does it go up and how quickly? Because, you know, there is a lot of competition now. You know, we've got obviously something like the iPhone 4S. Google have just announced the first ice cream sandwich phones. And against that background, obviously, the Windows Phone device is going to have to compete in the mid-tier. You know, again, it's Symbian Belle versus Android. And there's a, you know, be interesting to see what happens there. That's, I think, probably almost the most unpredictable part of it. Because it's obviously very price sensitive and dependent on what operators choose to do. And I think that may be perhaps the Achilles heel of Symbian Belle going forward. You know, it needs to get operator uptake and adoption, and there may be some reluctance because of, you know, the perceived, you know, end of line of Symbian. I mean, it's probably a bit unfair given the timescales we're talking about, you know, Symbian support out to 2016 and all of that. But I wonder whether that might, you know, be a problem. On the other hand, you know, Nokia will be able to use its scale, and Elop said specifically he'd been meeting with operators and they'd be very enthusiastic about Belle, saying that the UI refresh, you know, which we'll talk about later in this podcast, had been very successful and was getting a good positive response. So, you know, it's actually quite a lot of wait and see what happens next. But I think the important point is that kind of there's been this turnaround, but at the same time acknowledge that it's still in a, you know, a weak position, and a lot depends on what happens next.
Yeah, and I don't think we can really indicate trends from just one quarter, because I think whereas I think people like us and people listening to the podcast are probably buying a lot of unlocked phones just for the sheer enthusiasm of it, most of the people on the street are getting phones on contracts and are renewing after 18 months, 2 years, or even 1 year. So, I mean, we have to wait. So there's a time lag effect there. So we have to wait and see how those go. So, I mean, we're still going to be talking about this 2 years on.
I think that's right. I mean, because you can kind of take a bear case there and say that Nokia's been absent from the high end of the market for 2 years, so it's going to be difficult to re-establish itself. I think the issue is there. It's very different between markets. So in somewhere like the United States, it's kind of the worst case scenario, and there it may be harder to come back. On the other hand, you know, it's the Microsoft brand will be primary there, and maybe the Nokia one secondary. In Western Europe, somewhere like the UK, that's sort of less true. But, you know, certainly it's fair to say that Nokia haven't really been competitive for the last 18 months in the UK at the high end. So, you know, you question how quickly can that come back? What are people's memories like? I think the position is clearer out in somewhere like Asia, where Nokia hasn't had so much brand erosion. But it's a really difficult question to answer, and I think part of it is kind of wait and see, because it depends how you execute. And at the end of the day, consumers can be quite fickle about this, and it's not a simple case of, are the devices good enough? It's, of course, the marketing message that goes with it, decisions that operators make, what the competitors do in the same breath. I mean, I think I will say with Ice Cream Sandwich and iOS 5 and iPhone 4S, Nokia aren't being given an insurmountable mountain to overcome. You can certainly see there haven't been any really massive game-changing developments, which I think actually means they're all going to be on a fairly even standing in terms of kind of the features and the buzz around them. A lot of it's going to come down to perception amongst users, you know, different cultural norms, the marketing message, you know, price sensitivity and all those kind of factors. There isn't, you know, it's not like when the iPhone first launched where it was the cool device with the halo. Now there's, you know, a lot of competitiveness in the market that I think we haven't seen for quite a few years. So as I say, it's going to be really interesting to watch.
I think one thing we can maybe think about and ask retrospectively is that 14 months ago, we were talking about Nokia results and saying that Nokia were, well, it was actually when Nokia was under OPK's leadership, was bolstering itself by lowering prices, and we're saying the same thing now. And it's also been said that the Symbian Anna update, which had to have been planned before Steve Needlock came in, was, as you said, Rafe, in previous podcasts, that was not to get new customers, it was to retain the old ones. So how much do we think of this delayed turnaround, if indeed it is, unless it's just a slight inflection point, is actually due to the older policies, and how much is due to anything that Steve Needlock has done since he took over a year ago?
Yeah, I think you have to divide this into kind of two halves. I think both Anna and indeed Bell as well have actually been planned for quite a while. I mean, people don't always appreciate the kind of the time lag that takes place. But if you look at Symbian Bell, it can clearly find its design roots in something like Symbian 4, which was being planned, you know, anything up to two or more years ago. And so a lot of that was decided before Edop came in, and you know the decision to drop Symbian 4 and go to the Anna Bell model, I think really was something that happened under Anssi van Jokke and OPK. Obviously when Edop came in, the strategy did change a bit, but I think that was also on the cards anyway, as I've mentioned before. So it's difficult to attribute some of the changes actually directly to Edop, and I think you could say the same thing about mobile phones. You know, dual SIM devices were on the way, touch and type had kind of already arrived. However, while those decisions had been made, it's quite a different thing to go ahead and execute them. And it does seem that there's, I mean, I described it in the news post on this as sort of in a comment that a rocket had been put under the dual SIM devices. They came to market very quickly comparatively to what the progress had been before, and in quite a significant number of different models. And you could say the same about Anna and Bell. You know, Anna, I think, was late, but Bell seems to have arrived in a much more timely manner, you know, to the extent there's actually quite a small gap between them, and people have scratched their heads a bit about that. And I think you have to give some credit to Steve Needlock and his new leadership team, you know, the likes of Joe Harlow in the smartphone division, for example, and a lot of the Symbian product managers. And, you know, the Symbian developer teams have come in for a lot of criticism over the years, but they really performed in the last 12 months delivering Anna and Bell on what must be quite a difficult, you know, timeline, and under a context which isn't easy, you know, when Symbian's been sort of said, no, this is no longer our primary platform, it's become our franchise platform. So I think, you know, those teams deserve quite a lot of credit. And if you look at the new Bell devices, there's a lot of very nice design, a lot of very nice hardware innovation in those devices. So some of it is down to Elop, but I actually would say probably his achievements are more around maybe getting something like operational expenditure down and letting other people make the decisions and get things done, which of course is, you know, the sign in one sense of a good CEO. In terms of his strategic vision for Windows Phone, we can't make the judgment call on that because we simply don't have enough data, but he's done very well in kind of streamlining what was already there and getting it running smoothly. And so for that, I think I have to give him credit, and certainly it's a very positive sign for the future.
Yeah. Let's move on now. This has already taken 15 minutes on the Nokia results. It's been a great chat, but I think we should just acknowledge that Nokia World is next week. The actual dates are, he said, looking at
the 26th and the 27th of October.
So that's the Wednesday and the Thursday. We'll be there in force. Obviously, we do not comment on leaks. on All About Symbian, but we do kind of look ahead to the future. I think it's fair to say, Rafe, that judging from the leaks we have seen and judging from our own gut feeling and inside knowledge, there will be at least two Windows Phone devices launched and probably maybe even one Symbian smartphone as well.
Yes, I mean, I think that's quite likely. The Symbian device, I'm not sure whether the 603 that was announced last week is going to be the one that kind of counts as the new one around Nokia World, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see another device. And I wouldn't be that surprised if it's sort of towards the higher end of the mid-tier, because there does seem to be something maybe missing in that bit of the portfolio.
An 8 replacement.
I'd like to think so, but you know... Probably unlikely at this point, but you never know. Yeah. I mean, the reason I mention that is for all the excitement around Windows Phone, it is only going to be able to roll out into a limited number of markets initially. You know, that's to do with language support and marketplace support and all the kind of bits that you don't necessarily think about that are needed to launch a phone. And so there are going to be quite a few markets where Nokia might need sort of a relatively high-end smartphone to, you know, fill the space before the Windows Phone devices come along. And actually that's going to be true, I would say, for probably a couple of years maybe. And so let's hope we see something like that. I don't have any insider information on that particular thing. I mean, I think it's quite likely we'll see something. And yes, I'm sure we'll see a couple of Windows Phone devices. I mean, I'll eat my N8 if we don't, to be honest. you know, Nokia have sort of been hinting at it, and at this point they don't want to under-deliver. It's kind of interesting, back in February, everyone sort of said, oh, they'll be doing really well if they manage to produce a phone this year, and it looks like there's going to be two of them. Yet I suspect there'll still be some, they need to do more, but it will be a considerable achievement. But, you know, for all of the excitement around that, you know, there's plenty of other things to look forward to as well.
Yeah, and of course, and even Nokia N8, I mean, I'm talking there about a possible replacement, eyeing up, you know, 15 megapixels and even larger sensor and all the other goodies. But in actual fact, the N8 with version 25 firmware, with Anna, or even with Bell coming out, the Bell update, that's still a terrific smartphone in terms of hardware specification and all the gadgets, things you get to play with, and the raw functionality. And to be honest, on the hardware front, it still knocks spots off much of that in the Windows Phone world, which is a lot more locked down by Microsoft. So I reckon the N8's got quite a few months left in it yet.
Yeah, I have to agree there about the N8. I mean, I've got a HTC Mertzat and an N8 here on my desk. The Mertzat's there just for me to learn Windows Phone, and I keep my SIM in it to use it as my main phone for a while. But I keep going back to the N8, because whereas, okay, even the Symbian Anna user interface may be comparatively clunky, but I can just get more done with it, and I really do keep coming back to it. As for expectations of Nokia World, I doubt we're going to see anything with a Xenon Flash. However, if Nokia do release a Windows phone with similar hardware to a certain other Nokia device, the N9, I think that's as close as you're going to get, because that is a very good camera, but there's just no Xenon Flash, and I think we're probably not going to see anything else with a physical keyboard like an E-series equivalent.
Yeah, my N8 was starting to take offence from my comments just then. So I love you, N8. I'm not going to leave you. Stay with me, N8.
And I think the thing is, of course, about the thing with the Windows Phone, with the so-called Nokia experience on Windows Phone, a big part of the question is, you know, what difference can Nokia make in the hardware department? And I think, you know, that camera and the design of the N9, if that's in a Windows Phone device, that could be quite a compelling package. I mean, hardware is still really, really important. I think the other thing that's worth saying about Nokia World is it's not just about the devices. You know, one of the interesting things is you always get to see a lot of interesting applications, developers, and of course all the Nokia services around Windows Phone. There's plenty of questions about how app stores are going to work, what form is Nokia Maps going to take, and when's it going to arrive. But equally, well, you know, traditionally we see updates for all of the maps and some of the kind of future-looking stuff for Symbian devices. So we'll be reporting on all of that. And then there's also the bit about connecting the next billion, which is kind of series 40, and we might start to hear about kind of the next generation of that. And I think one of the most interesting bits of Nokia World will not be specifically about the devices, it will be about some of the kind of underlying thinking and strategy at Nokia, because I've sort of hinted at this before, but I think in one sense the most important thing out of Nokia World will not be, you know, as such the devices, of course they're the headlines, but it's going to be talking about how Nokia can go forward in terms of marketing in terms of strategy, persuading people to try the Windows Phone experience. You know, they can talk about the high Net Promoter Scores, which are how much people recommend the device once they get their hands on it, but they do need to get the device into the hands of people. The same actually, I think, applies to the Symbian Belle devices. You know, they'll have good scores once people try them, but there's a, in some markets, I would say not all markets, there's a bit of toxicity around Nokia smartphones in consumer perception. We've talked about how it's not necessarily fair, but nonetheless, it exists. And you, how you do a complex rollout of a new platform Windows Phone, how you keep the Symbian Belle momentum going, you know, because one of the dangers is, of course, if you talk too much about Windows Phone, you undermine your performance of Symbian Belle. And that's really, really important in the mid-tier. You know, Nokia need that as well. And, you know, the same applies to Series 40. You know, there's been great performance there, as we talked about earlier, from the Nokia Q3 results. But, you know, what's the next stage for that? You know, how can developers engage with the company? You know, what are the big trends that Nokia see coming? It's kind of their stall on the world to, you know, talk about what they think as a company. And, you know, under the new sort of leadership of Stephen Elop, there is a sense that Nokia is a sort of a new company, or there's a refresh, a restart. And so it'll be really interesting to see some of the messages that come across. So, you know, it'll be people talking about design, it'll be people talking about marketing, sales, developers, all that kind of thing. And, you know, we'll try and bring you as much as we can of those messages as well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on. The Nokia 700, this is the first of the Symbian Belle smartphones to make its way for review procedures at All About Symbian House. It's been in our hands. Ray's done some photos. I've done some photos. My first part of my review will be up on the site around about the time this podcast goes live, so do look for that. Ray, you've had it for a day or so before I had it. My impressions are that it's a really, really neat piece of hardware with a few disappointments for me. But then let me just say that the disappointments are that although it's a tiny device, I think they could have squeezed in a larger 3.5-inch screen. The 3.2-inch screen just seems rather small compared to the frontal area. But having said that, I don't think this is aimed at me. The whole point of this 700 is it's aimed at the sort of people who would buy 2 years ago the Nokia 5800, the people who want basically a feature phone with some extra stuff, with some smartphone bits, something that's a really high-end phone, but not necessarily an all-out geek's plaything, which is, I guess, describes me. Does that sound about right, that the 700 is a lovely phone and will do very well, but it just really isn't necessarily for any all-about Symbian readers?
I think that might be underselling it a little bit. I mean, I do agree with you. You know, the 3.2-inch screen is limiting in one sense, but, you know, we're talking about a mid-tier device. You know, it's at the £280-odd device SIM-pre, and, you know, so you'll be able to get it for less than that in time, and obviously less on a contract. It's not quite pay-as-you-go territory, but it's not that far off it at the moment. You're right, you know, it isn't, you know, one for geeks. They're going to want a bigger screen, and, you know, they might look at something like the Nokia 701, which has the 3.5-inch screen. Nonetheless, there's a lot to like about the Nokia 700. I mean, in terms of the hardware, I think it's, you know, really solidly put together. The screen is gorgeous, and that's, you know, helped by the kind of the pixel density of the screen because of the 3.2 inches. But also, you know, it is actually really very thin indeed. It feels like a very slim phone. You know, it is a move away from kind of smartphones that, you know, even when they're, you know, relatively thin, can still feel quite chunky because they're relatively wide. You know, it's the advantage of using the 16:9 aspect ratio. You can actually get quite a narrow phone and still sort of fit in a full touchscreen in the sort of Symbian NHD resolution. So, yes, I think it's fair to say that it's not, you know, for the geeks of this world. Nonetheless, there's a lot of people who might like this. I mean, I hesitate to use the word as a second device, but if you're not sort of obsessed with a big phone and, you know, a big screen to interact with, actually, you know, this is bang up to date in Symbian standards. It's got a lot of the good onboard hardware in terms of, you know, the GPS, and we'll talk about Belle in a minute because that's another topic. But just as a bit of hardware, I think it's a significant improvement on from the first generation of Symbian 3 devices, the way they've managed to shrink it down quite a bit. And it feels a little bit different. You know, it's got the kind of nice, I think it's aluminium, the material on the backing, but the rest of it is very solidly put together. You know, again, fantastic build quality. And just a few little bits on design. The one thing I'm personally not sure about is the chin that's on the kind of the bottom of the device with kind of a fake grill sort of over it. But that's only a very minor quibble, and that's very much a sort of subjective
It's not totally fake, and the main speaker's under there, and because the speaker actually is facing you, you don't get all that horrible attenuation of the high frequencies by sticking out the side or being muffled by plastic. So I reckon the speaker on this comes across really, really well, and that's partly because of the grill.
Yes, absolutely. The positioning of the speaker. I mean, it's true to say that the whole grill is not a speaker. It's just somewhere in the...
Indeed.
Which is, you know, kind of what people sometimes might think when looking at it. But yes, the, you know, the positioning of... I mean, yes, the speaker is a highlight. I think the screen's a highlight. The buttons on the side, because it's a very thin device, I did find a little bit fiddly. I mean, it's fairly typical of when you get down to a device of this size. So I think it's a fair enough trade-off. So, you know, it's still got all the stuff like GPS, Wi-Fi, all the sensors, and, you know, the AMOLED screen, kind of mentioned it a couple of times, but actually that was a standout for me when I was just playing with the device for 24 hours.
As well,
Yes, and, you know, outside conditions. And often with devices around this price point, you start losing that kind of thing. And, you know, especially on a small screen, it's important to be able to see what's there. And so, you know, because you have less to play with in terms of angling and all that kind of thing. So, yes, it's not, you know, let's not kid ourselves. It's not a high-end device. But given the price point, you know, I think it's a very solid mid-tier device. And kind of it sort of fills a gap that existed between something like the C601 and the C7 last year. And so in some place, I think it could do very well. And, I mean, you kind of said it as people buy it, getting it as a souped-up feature phone. And actually, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, of course, undersell Symbian. I mean, it's a very, very capable device. It can do anything that the, you know, the higher-end devices can do. And it's got, you know, the fast processor, the extra RAM, and all of that in it. But for someone picking it up who's, you know, used to using a Nokia device, they're going to find a lot to like, you know, the very strong telephone functions and the communication functions, a lot of familiarity. And so, you know, it's obviously going to be one of the devices leading the Bell charge. And, you know, I think if people give it a chance, there's a lot to like.
Yeah, just the software, obviously, Symbian Bell is the first time that you and I have had hands-on with a production device with Symbian Bell on board. And there are, although quite a bit of it, I am with tongue-in-cheek inclined to point towards Android and say, they nicked that from Android, they nicked that from Android, they copied that from iPhone, etc., etc. At the same time, it is very much a modernization of the interface and bringing it in line with where the other platforms are, so that when people pick it up, they think, oh yes, I know how to use this, which is a fair enough philosophy. Just one little nice touch, Ray. I've just spotted this in the last couple of seconds. In the main application grid, I mean, it's now a flat grid of all the icons, and one long scrolling list just does on Android, and I guess just as an iPhone, when you swipe from screen to screen, that you can set up folders if you want to, but that's left for power users. But here's a nice touch. On the, if you tap on the More button on the application grid, Rafe, you get a range A to Z. I think it's to basically pull all your application icons in alphabetical order. So basically, if you're trying to find something really like in a Shazam, and it's listed among 150 other icons, and you can't find it, you can go to A to Z order. There it is. It's under S. And I thought, well, there we go. My list is now alphabetical. I'm now going to have to reorganize things just as I wanted them, and that'll take ages. No, if you tap on More again, you get the menu item arrange as it was. It remembers the original order you had them and reverts to that. And you can toggle between the alphabetical and your own custom order at will, which is a really, really nice touch.
Yeah, and there are quite a few nice touches like that that you sort of discover in Bell as you're playing with it. But as you said, I think the big thing is it's kind of a refresh of the UI to make it feel more contemporary. I mean, I think most Symbian users will be able to pick it up almost immediately and start using it. You know, it's things like shrinking down the sort of status bar at the top of the screen. It makes a lot of sense because it gives you more screen real estate to play with and moves away from kind of the, I guess, the S63rd edition heritage. And similarly at the bottom, you don't need the massive amount of space that you do for the soft keys. You know, originally it was probably a good idea because you were using the resistive touchscreens where, you know, having a decent target to aim at and the screens weren't of high quality. But these days, that's not really an issue. And certainly I found it very fast as well. And from a performance point of view, you know, impressive. You know, there is very little waiting around for anything. And, you know, you do things like the multitasking, and it is, you know, instantly switching between things and able to run quite a few of the, you know, powerful application at one time. You know, that's a good sign of kind of the extra RAM that's in there has allowed that to happen. But more than anything else, I say it's kind of that feeling of, you know, refresh and renewal. And I didn't have a chance to play with it as my day-to-day device for any significant period of time, so it's difficult to give you an overall assessment. But Bell is, in one sense, a much bigger upgrade than Anna in terms of how you'll perceive it. You know, there are a lot of visual changes, and it does feel like a much more modern UI. You know, the under-the-hood changes with Anna were probably bigger, but, you know, things like, you know, rearranging the UI, and a lot of the elements are still there, but they've been redesigned. There's the Nokia Pure font in there as well, of course, and other bits and pieces make it feel like a very different experience to what went before. I think some Symbian users might be a bit shocked by the level of changes, sort of go, oh, I want my familiar Symbian back. But I think it takes very little time to adjust. And it's not that there's been a whole-scale revolution in how the UI works. You know, there are, in some places, changes. You know, you mentioned the notifications drop down earlier. That's obviously one of them. But in terms of menus and sort of scrolling through things, you know, it's much the same. You know, it's tweaks like instead of having labeled soft keys, you've got four icons at the bottom representing the various commands, and it's a better use of screen state. And I feel, you know, I want to use it for a few weeks before I comment, but, you know, big thumbs up from me. I think Bell is really very beautiful.
Yeah, I agree, especially on these on the AMOLED screen, and certainly on this 3.2-inch screen with the clear black display. NHD is just so crisp, and the colours pop at you. The clear black display just looks like it's painted on. Really, really nice. I love the on the new home screen system. I'm going to have to get used to this because I'm really a single home screen man. I've written tutorials about this in the past about how I dispense with two of my active home screens on Symbian 3 phones and just use the one home screen with my top six widgets. But on Bell, we've got this facility to put up, for example, favorite contacts individually with the photo of them. So you really can have the people that are most important to you just front and center on your home screen, and just one tap away. And then the different sizes of widgets, you can have 1x1s and 2x1s and 2x2s. And you'll when you play with it yourself, you'll see what I mean. So you really can customize your home screen so that it looks totally individual to you, as, of course, Android users have been doing for a while. But it's the first time we've been able to play to such a degree on Symbian phones. And the overall effect is quite mesmerizing, I have to say. I love the transitions as well between the backgrounds and the home screens. As you swipe from screen to screen, the two backgrounds just fade one into the other. Really, really nice. So I'm going to have to get used to using multiple home screens again and basically thinking about what I want where, which will be a bit of a culture shock. But I'm looking forward to it. And even if the 700 doesn't become my day-to-day smartphone, I'm sure I can pass it to someone else in the team and they can try it. And I think for myself, I'd probably go for the 701 if I had to pick a Bell device at the moment.
But of course, the exciting thing is it is coming to all the other Symbian 3 devices. We've still got no official timing on that. We've talked about it before. It's probably going to be end of November or December, or maybe even later. These things are a bit difficult to predict. But what came out of all of what you were saying, and I would say the same thing, is the attention to detail in the design is really very good indeed. And I would say that's, you know, probably the key difference I would pick out between the Bell release and some of the earlier Symbian releases. It feels like a lot more attention has been paid to the UI design, and someone's sat down and thought about it quite carefully. And as I've said before, Bell traced its roots back to Symbian 4. It's, you know, been a long time coming. But for a UI that has changed relatively little from right back to the 7650 in some ways, you know, you can see the familiar elements. You know, there's been colour changes and the screens expand over time, but this is the first big departure from, you know, what was Series 60 became Symbian 3, and it's really very pleasant indeed. And that attention to design detail is, I think, something that's also apparent in the newer hardware, and is probably the thing that makes Nokia stand out from some of its competitors in terms of smartphones, both in hardware but also in this software. You know, it is differentiated, it is something quite unique. And it all feels very Nokia-esque, if I can use that word. And so I think a lot of credit goes to the designers in this case, of, you know, the way that the UI looks. And it, you know, really backs up what we've known all along has been a very powerful operating system in terms of functionality and features. And it does feel like it gives it a real breath of new life.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we finish this podcast, one last thing. We've got to say Nokia World next week. I'm always fascinated by the mobile device of choice that that you guys choose to, you know, to wander around the show floor, to check email through the day. You know, being a real event road warrior, as it were. I know last year, David, you were rocking the E72 as your main do-everything device. So what are you bringing this year?
This year, last year I didn't take a laptop. Rafe kind of lent me a netbook. So this year I am bringing my Ubuntu laptop and my do-everything phone. I'm only bringing one phone, and like I know a lot of people who follow us are doing, I'm just taking the N8. And the N8 is going to be my communication device, my camera, and my 3G dongle. And I'm not, and even though it doesn't have a replaceable battery, I'm not bringing a charger for it, because the laptop, as well as being the workhorse and the rating station, is going to be the charging station too.
Lovely. So basically, Rafe horrified you so much with a Windows netbook last year, you thought never again, and you bought a replacement that doesn't run Windows. Very good. I'm taking along the N8 as well. It's the second N8. I'm also bringing along the HD7, the running Windows phone, just so that when Stephen Elop or someone on stage shouts out something that Windows Phone 7 can do, I think, oh yes, I'll look that up. I'll check that out right now, because I'll have a device on me. So I guess I'll be a two-device person. And I'm also bringing a little Atrix web top. You can look that up on the web if you're listening to this. Like a smartphone that becomes a laptop. I'm just trialing that out. Rafe, what do you bring as your do-everything smartphone?
I'm probably going to be using the E6. I haven't made the final decision yet, but when I need something that I know is going to get me through the day and isn't going to let me down, the E6 is great. You know, it can double as, you know, quite serious amounts of text entry if necessary when doing live texting or live tweeting. But I will probably have a couple of other devices with me. And like you, I'll probably bring the Omnia 7 as a Windows phone device as kind of the reference. And also it'll be interesting for doing comparison pictures and that kind of thing. But like David, I'm not quite entirely free of the laptop. That will be sitting in the back, because that's where I'll be doing the sort of the workhorse of writing, but also editing any pictures and videos we take as well. So I suspect I'm going to be a bit more heavily laden down than you, Steve. You're going for the minimalist approach. And I'll also have a camera as well for capturing the extra images that the N8 can't quite manage because of the lighting or the video or the close-up on the macro stuff. The N8 probably could manage, but my camera skills aren't the best in the world. And so having a little bit of extra help in that department is always a good thing. But the E6 will be my workhorse for sort of keeping in touch with the team as we're all running around headless chickens at Excel Center, which for those that don't know is an absolutely huge place. And trying to keep track of everyone at Nokia World is a challenge in itself.
Yeah, so do watch the site. Well, you'll be listening to this on Monday, so watch the site this week for our live coverage. There'll be live photos and comments and probably live blogging of the various keynotes and probably some news articles as well. So do watch the site. In the meantime, you can catch us on Twitter at AAS. And a big thank you to Rafe Blandford.
Thanks, everybody. And if there's anything you want to see us covering in particular at Nokia World or any other feedback, as always, please get in touch.
And a big thank you to David Gilson.
Thanks, everyone. And if you're going to Nokia World too and you want to say hello, just look for the bald guy.
I think there's quite a few of those.
What does that say about the stress of the smartphone world, the Symbian smartphone world?
Oh, yes.
Anyway, you can also catch me there, of course. Do come up and say hello if you're there and listening to this podcast. I suspect it'll be manic, but we're all going to enjoy it. So thank you very much for listening to this Insight podcast. See you next week.